All right, welcome back. Headlines today, lots of them from the world of the pandemic. Oh, my. Mandatory quarantine camps were just rolled out in New Zealand. This is from Mike Adams, so make of it what you will. They've got camps they are setting up down there. Okay, you heard Dick Allgaier mention Hawaii is about to lock down again. Now, a lot of people who were really pushing hard for lockdowns are complaining that the economy has been devastated by them. It's kind of like they didn't think ahead too far. Why Americans should adopt the Sweden coronavirus model? Well, it's a little late for that, but they're still kicking that around. It's just a different approach, and they're happy with it. Judge rules against woman who claimed quarantine rules violated her right to travel. Mm-hmm. Massachusetts enforces rules that could rob parents of their children if they cannot access virtual learning. In other words, video learning at home. They're making real sure that everybody gets connected to that with that kind of a posturing. Where's my eyes? One story I had here. Where is it? Ah, nursing homes with poor quality rating. This is from Business Insider. Nursing homes with poor quality ratings got millions in those PPP loans. A lot of that money went to strange places. Where's that story? I'll find it yet. Yeah. Ah, here it is. The gun that shoots masks onto people's faces. I'll leave that up to you to look up because it's pretty funny. It's not a gun with a bullet in it, but it does throw a mask on someone's face. Yes. It's kind of a fun story. Anyhow, back with us tonight is the inimitable Dr. Henry Nyman, who is here to share his brilliance in the field of virology and common sense. Welcome back, Henry.
Well, Jeff, it's good to be back. There's quite a bit of activity out there. Quite a bit of it revolves around schools and getting back to school or getting out of school. And and exactly what's real or what isn't. And there's a lot of parallel universe stuff out there, and I think that's kind of driving some of this resistance, which is just setting things up for the virus to have devastating consequences this fall.
The virus is very happy. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. The virus is doing well and kind of looking forward to an easy time of it in the upcoming months. Everything's moving in its favor, and it's already got little outposts throughout the country, and there's lots of virus there, and it's going to get cooler, days are going to get shorter, people are going to spend more time inside, flu's going to come along, and it's going to have a field day, and it's going to be aided and abetted by foolish attempt to reopen, to basically set up in-class
schools. Three high schools in Georgia already shut down. Yeah.
Yeah. Now the three, just to clarify, the three schools in Georgia that are shut down are all in the same Cherokee school district.
Right.
This is the one that we've been talking about that kind of started out with, one of the students getting detention because she took pictures of how close together her classmates were in the hallways between classes. And she also noted that 90% of her classmates were not wearing masks. And more media reports indicated that something like 71% of the students opted for in-class teaching. So they didn't really clear out the the classrooms that much because most of the kids decided to take classes at the school. And then they started running into serious problems with students immediately testing positive and then going into quarantine. Last week, just at two of the schools, well, there were two high schools. I think there were 21 schools that had at least one student confirmed positive. But I think most of the quarantine was being done at the high schools because they had multiple students. I think they had 15 confirmed and 14 still awaiting test results. And they initially were going to close down the schools for deep cleaning, and then they were going to vote on whether they were going to open them up. And they had something like 1,300 students out. And one of the parents, the same parent who was involved with setting up the tea party, as well as that famous or infamous press conference about a month ago in front of the Supreme Court, where the doctors were talking about the benefits of hydroxychloroquine and got on Trump basically posted the news conference and got banned for 12 hours or something from posting on Twitter for giving out misinformation on the pandemic. And the doctor that he was most impressed with was the one that's in the strip mall that had left Louisiana under less than ideal circumstances. And he kind of set up shop in this strip mall that basically said, come on down, you know, get treated early. We've got hydroxychloroquine. And
just about it, too.
And then she bragged about how many cases she treated, and some had diabetes, and some had asthma, and they all recovered. You know, they all did well. She said none died, none of them died. And you know, if you took a picture, I mean, you could see the picture because she had her Twitter account, and it basically had the name of the clinic. So if you just basically Googled the clinic's name, they showed you where it was. It was the same place for her ministry. And, they were both in the same strip mall in the same building. And, it wasn't the type of setup that was going to get critically ill patients coming in. These were people that kind of saw the ad and came on in to see what they could do. And, you know, they had hydroxychloroquine, so they might as well give it a try. And like I've said before, 80% of the cases with COVID recover without any treatment. So you can stick a bottle of lysine by their bedside and say whatever you want, you know, 10 times a day, and you know, within a week or two you'll be fine. Yeah, you know? you can treat it with whatever you want, and 80% of the patients recover, and you can attribute it to your bottle of lysine or your hydroxychloroquine or you know. Well, speaking of hydroxychloroquine, there's a new one, Oleander. Oleander's Trump's latest miracle cure. This is this is backed by the My Little Pill guy. I'm not making this up.
Wow.
The My Pillow guy went to Trump and said, hey, you hear about this? I hear this works really, really well. And Trump says, oh, really? Yeah, how does that work? Oh, it tried it in test tubes. It kills the virus in test tubes. I mean, how bad could it be? And apparently the company that was getting ready to market, went and gave a sweet deal for the MyPillow guy to get a lot of stock and be on their board.
MyPillow. This is hard. This is really, God.
And he's pitching it. The drug itself has not been, it hasn't gotten past the test tube state. They basically.
Are you talking about oleanders right now still?
Right.
Do you know, just for our listeners, dear friends, for God's sakes, don't consume oleander ever. Ever.
Right.
It'll kill you.
Toxic.
It is a deadly, toxic plant.
Right.
One
right.
leaf
right.
can
right.
kill you. There, when I was a right. young fellow, three sailors were up in Griffith Park in L.A., and they got an oleander twig and cooked hot dogs over a fire. And they'd all died because the toxic sap or whatever the liquid in the oleander branch was got into the hot dogs. That's all it took, and they were dead. Killed all three of them.
Right. And that's one of the issues. You can get a lot of different drugs that work in the test tube because you don't have to worry about what it does to the host. You're just looking at what it does to the virus. And so you can, you know, basically put the virus into a cell line. You know, if it kill a whole bunch of monkeys, you can take a cell line that was made 50 years ago and grown in a test tube, and you can infect it with the virus, and then you can show that if you add your compound of choice, that the amount of virus made by those cells goes down. You know, it's dramatically reduced. But it's a long way from showing that it can kill a virus in tissue culture to it'll kill the virus in a person without killing the person.
this is very dangerous.
It's at the in vitro level, and whatever he is, CEO, owner, pitchman of MyPillow, has got put on the board of the company that's trying to get this drug to market. And the quickest way to get it to market, they think anyway, they might be right, is to talk to Donald J. Trump and say, hey,
I don't get this.
Solve all your problems. We can solve all your problems. We have this new drug, works great, and just needs a few more tests and a little bit of promotion, and we'll save the world. So
part of the oleander plant can lead to dire consequences quickly. Part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. What they're using is the toxic part of it. I mean that's essentially what they've isolated, and that's what they're using, and it kills viruses. They're not saying it won't kill you, but it'll kill a virus in the test tube. So, in any of that, getting back to the parallel universe, I just wanted to kind of go over this story that I kind of heard about, it was a doctor who's kind of in denial of the SARS-CoV-2. he doesn't think it really exists, and B, doesn't think it really is cause for concern. If it doesn't exist, it's not cause for concern. But there are
people out there who do not believe this is a real virus. It's not a recognizable right. virus. It's not a laboratory confirmed virus. It's not. It's fiction. No, friends, there is right. a virus, and it's a nasty virus, right. and it's been proven tens, right. if not almost 100,000 times proven
right.
over and over again that it
right.
exists.
Right. And the argument that he used was there was a paper that came out back in early February. And the paper basically said that they had a traveler from, I think it was from Nepal, and he had gone to Wuhan and got infected with the virus and had COVID. And they got a swab from this patient, mm-hmm. and they completed the full sequence. The full sequence is about a little over 30,000 nucleotides. So they went, they got the string of 30,000 letters, and if they compared it to the original sequence, there were about four or five differences. So that's four or five differences out of 30,000. It was over 30,000. So over 30,000 of the positions were identical to the virus that was originally isolated in Wuhan. This one actually is that ORF8 mutant that I had talked about, lineage mm-hmm. that I had talked about way mm-hmm. back when. In fact, four of the first five cases in the United States were due to this particular lineage that had this change in the eight reading frame. The eight gene that was in an open reading frame, and it had this one mutation, and ORF8 was the same gene that was mutated back with SARS. So, it wasn't an unusual isolate even back in February. It was an emerging lineage, and they had the full sequence. And somebody went to him and said, well, doesn't this prove that the virus exists? They went and they got this swab from patient, and they got this sequence of the SARS-CoV-2. And he said, well, they don't have the virus. They just have these sequences. And these sequences, they go and they make these probes, and they take these little pieces here and these little pieces there, and they put them all together, and they say it was made by a virus, but all they got is a bunch of little pieces. Now, this guy has MD after his name, but, MDs aren't necessarily sequencers. And this guy obviously knows nothing about sequencing, nothing about viruses, and nothing about evolution. So he said, you can kind of pull all these things out. They didn't actually get an isolate. They didn't really isolate the virus. So the fact that they just found these sequences in the patient doesn't even mean a virus exists. And just to let your readers understand that sequence technology has improved over the years. So it's very efficient. And if you got a clinical sample, you've got two main ways you can get the sequence of the virus. Number one, you can sequence directly from the tissue sample. And it's by taking these probes and getting different pieces of the virus and then stitching them all together. China released the full sequence back in, I think, January 11th. It was definitely in January of this year. And once the full sequence that had all 30,000 letters, that makes it very easy to go ahead and pick out a primer here, a primer there, and basically cover the whole sequence and get all these little pieces and stitch them all together. And computers stitch them all together. They know exactly where they are because they've got a blueprint. They've got the full sequence of what the original sequence was in Wuhan. And like I say, the sequences, this particular sequence, over 30,000, I think the sequence was 30,011. And something like 30,005 or 6 were identical to the original. There were like four or five mutations. So it's very easy to pick almost any region And you're going to get an exact match because there's only four differences out of 30,000.
Wow.
And because of that, it's fairly easy to do a direct sequence. So you don't have to isolate the virus. But others like to isolate the virus. And so if you go to GSAD and look at the sequences, there's one column that says the origin of the sequence. And it can say clinical sample, which means they sequenced it directly from the samples, or they can list a cell line, which means they took the virus from that sample, put it into a cell line like this green monkey cell line, this viral line, and grew up the virus, and then isolated the took the virus that is being made in this cell. It's exactly the same thing they did for the oleander. They take the virus, they infect the cell line, they show they can kill it. These guys take the clinical sample, isolate the virus in the cell line, and take the virus that's made and sequence it. It doesn't matter which one you use, whether you take a direct sequence or whether you take the virus, you get the same 30,000 letters, which are 99.9% identical to each other. And right now, at that time, this is one of the earlier papers. So there hadn't been that many sequences out there. This was isolated in February. It was fairly new. And they published it. And back in February, you could get a publication out of a single sequence because there weren't that many sequences yet. Today, there's 82,000 sequences at GSAD. So these 82,000 sequences were done by researchers around the world. And they, literally, there's hundreds of researchers that were involved in doing this. And they put these sequences in the database. You can go there and look at all 82,000 of them. And they all have over 30,000 letters, and they're all virtually identical. They've only got four or five changes out of 30,000. And it's very, a very well-known sequence. And it involves literally thousands of scientists around the world that because of, mostly because of avian influenza, your money has gone actually through the World Health Organization to these various labs around the world. So all of these countries, where if you look, there's 180, 200 countries that have confirmed cases of COVID, they all have the ability to sequence now. It used to be they would take the samples and they couldn't really do the sequencing, so they have to ship the samples to usually if they were in Africa or if they were in Asia, they would ship them to a lab in China, or they would ship them to a lab in Europe. They'd go to the UK, they'd go to Germany, they'd go to France, and they would send the sample, and then a week or two later, they would give them the sequence, and they would have the sequence of it. Now they're all set up so they can do their own sequencing. They don't have to send their sample off. They have their own lab set up. They get the sample. Like I say, the blueprint for this virus has been known since mid-January. Anybody with an internet connection can look at the sequence and get all 30,000 letters and design their own probes and go to a clinical sample, or they can grow the virus and go to the purified sample. They get the same result. So there's no way you're going to go into a clinical sample, even if you don't isolate the virus, and come up with a sequence that's 99.9% identical. And prior to January of this year, nobody knew what this sequence was. It had never been isolated previously. Nobody had ever come up with a 99.9% match. There had been a sequence that had come out initially that was 80% identical. And then this doctor, he's got this YouTube video, said, well, you know, they said it was SARS. It was like SARS, but how could it be like SARS? It was only 80% identical. The DNA between humans and chimpanzees is like 96%. You know, this 80%, it could have been almost anything. And this guy is comparing a complex organism like a human and a primate, which have a lot in common. I mean, they all have the same set of organs. They all have to, you know, pretty much do everything the same. You know, there might be a little bit different in the cognitive abilities.
Chimps don't drive. That's the big difference.
No, actually, I've seen them drive at circus. They have these little cars.
Chimp cars.
They can drive too. But the point is that the fact that chimpanzees and humans are 96% identical doesn't mean that a virus is 80% identical, isn't similar to that virus. Because the way they determine it is they do phylogenetic analysis. And even without the phylogenetic analysis, as I mentioned last week or so, that as soon as you had that sequence and you plugged that into GeneBank, 10 seconds later, you would have the top 100 matches in GeneBank. And if you took the SARS-CoV-2 sequence and plugged that in, you would get SARS-CoV-1 sequences. And all of the top sequences would be SARS-CoV-1. And in fact, probably the top 1,000 sequences would be SARS-CoV-1. So you didn't even have to do phylogenetic analysis to know that SARS-CoV-2 was a very close cousin of SARS-CoV-1. It was closer to SARS-CoV-1 than it was MERS, which is another coronavirus that also has 30,000 nucleotides. And it's not just the percent identical. It's how the genes are organized. These 30,000 letters end up coding for a dozen just different genes. And all the coronaviruses have essentially the same set of genes in the same order, even if they're only 80% identical, and they're not even 80%. MERS isn't even 80%. And in reality, the virus that was subsequently released was actually 96% identical to the SARS CoV-2. So this MD, that's what his letters say. I don't know. I didn't look him up. I just read what he said on his YouTube video to know that this guy had no idea what he was talking about. Or if he did, he was being deliberately misleading and trying to say that the virus didn't exist because they did a direct sequencing as opposed to isolating the virus. And if you go to GSAD, you would see it depends on the lab. Some labs, that's all they do is isolate the virus. That's pretty much what they do in Russia. So if you go in and look at the sequences that come out of Russia, those are sequences of isolates. They actually isolate the virus. And I had mentioned very early on that the U.S. CDC was isolating the virus and cloning the virus to make almost certainly to make a vaccine. And I think they did the one with the ORF8 mutation. Uh-huh. And they had published the original sequence and two clones, and the sequence of the two clones was identical to the original sequence. So they had actually cloned the virus to make a vaccine, and that's what all of these companies that have vaccines do. Even if they're only doing one of the genes, like the spike gene, they still have to isolate the virus and grow it up and get the spike gene and then express that in their adenovirus vector, if that's what they're going to end up using. But the spike gene comes from the SARS-CoV-2 that was isolated. So in spite of the fact that there are now 82,000 sequences made by dozens of labs worldwide, this guy's taking one paper that did direct sequencing and saying, well, you know, the virus doesn't even exist. They just picked up these sequences that just happened. I mean, you have to understand how the sequence is generated. Even when you make the primers are little bitty short sequences. Mm-hmm. They're like 15 or 20 nucleotides, and they pair them up so they have 15 or 20 at one position, and then they go downstream 250 and do another 15 to 20. And then to get the sequence in between, they use the virus sequence in the clinical sample as the template. So the primer sits on the sequence at one position. Another primer is 200, 300 nucleotides downstream, and then the insert is the space in between. And the gene has to be there to put that in. That's how it works. The polymerase reaction uses a template. It goes and does the same A's pairs with T and G and C pair to actually get the sequence. So what is produced by the polymerase is dictated by the sequence in the sample. And the fact that the sample had all 30,000 positions indicated in the sample had the virus. But the technology was so advanced that you didn't need to isolate the virus, because anybody with any background in this area knows that if you're going to get the 30,000 nucleotide sequence of a known virus, it's because the virus is there. You don't have to isolate the virus to know that's there, because you got the full sequence, and you can't get the sequence without the virus being there. So this guy said, well, it's just sequences, it wasn't an isolate. You need an isolate, And he's nuts. You don't need an isolate. You just need the sequence, especially if it's 30,000 nucleotides long. You don't get that randomly, by chance. You got an exact match. So that was just an example of what kind of parallel universe with 80,000 sequences at GSAD. This guy looks at one sequence that was generated in February and he says, well, now that's evidence that the virus doesn't even exist. So there are people in denial, but over and above the people in denial are the people that think that they can just ignore the virus, send students to school, be it elementary, high school, or college, and pretend the virus doesn't exist, and it won't be a problem. And that's absurd. I mean, three of the larger divisions are planning on fall football. And one of those divisions is the ACC. And a member of the Well, last time I looked, I don't know, they keep shuffling them, but last time I looked anyway, which wasn't recently, the ACC included University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, UNC. And UNC tried to do classes on campus they lasted 1 week. They had major outbreaks. They had multiple clusters in a couple dormitories and some other location. It was like three different buildings they had to shut down. And they said, everybody go back to your computer. No more on-site classes for this semester. Till who knows when. It's probably for the entire time period. So if the ACC is going to go ahead, it seems like they're going to be missing UNC from their schedule.
Chapel Hill. Yeah.
And I mean, there is a UNC Charlotte, but the big ones at Chapel Hill, and that's the one that's closing down. And that's the one the ACC. The other ones are in other divisions that are the ACC. So the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12 are the three conferences that said they're going to go ahead. And the Big 10 and the Pac-12 basically said they're not. So two out of the five said, it's not going to work this fall. Maybe we'll do it in the spring. And the other three said, not a problem. We got a plan. And their plan is falling apart already. And there have been no games played yet. This is just, you know, get the kids back in class, go to the dormitories, get all moved in, and
Then go home.
Go home. Right. Exactly right. That is the sequence. So these kids didn't do any classes, to my knowledge, and just going into the dormitories and then getting somebody to go around and do some testing made them realize that there were way too many that were positive before they even started class, and there'd be no way to control this, and that would fall by the wayside. And as you mentioned, you know, that Cherokee has got three high schools that are closed out already. And on a related note, Texas has solved the problem. They have large outbreaks at the border.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you think they're going to solve the problem of COVID in the schools on the border? You got any guesses how they're going to handle that?
I'm not good at guessing. No, go ahead.
They're going to follow the president's advice.
Oh.
And they're not going to test. They say they're not going to test any of these students.
We'll have your cases in Henry, no problem.
Exactly. They're going to leave it up to the local departments of health, and they can do whatever they want. But the State Department of Health isn't interested in getting any samples from these overrun schools. And they're going to say, you're on your own. And that is exactly why the situation this fall is going to be dire. You've got schools that figure, well, we're going to give it a try, you know, and we're going to do it without masks. I mean, the Cherokee School District, masks are optional. And in Florida, they got another one. I don't remember the district, but they also have masks optional. Mm-hmm. And the faculty decided that we got way too many cases, and we're just switching over to all virtual. And the governor says, well, if you switch over to all virtual, we're going to cut your funding and take away the money.
Inspiring words.
So, send those students to the class. We need warriors. We need this is let's see. He said it was like a Green Beret operation. You know, special forces. This is a special forces type approach. You know, they're in a war, and that's how you have to tackle this problem. And that translates into we need soldiers on the front lines to go into classes, get infected, and actually join the other side, because all they're going to do is spread the virus further. They're going to go to class, they're going to get infected, they're going to say, oops, doesn't look like it's going to work, just go home. And that's what all these colleges are going to do. They're going to go ahead and say, come on down, everybody come to class, get set up in your dormitories, class is going to start next week. And then they start testing who arrived, and they realize that if, as soon as they start class, the numbers are going to go through the roof. You know, these are college kids. You got to have them all together. You know, they're going to have parties. They're going to go ahead and figure out how to have the parties if they're not supposed to have the parties. And they're all going to infect each other. They figure they're invincible. And, you know, some of these college campuses, there aren't that many things to do on campus. They always have parties. And they're not going to have masks. You know, they're just going to have the parties and figure it's going to be okay. And they're, you know, they'll listen to the president's advice. You know, these kids are young, they're strong, not going to have a problem. They got a couple that have already died in Florida. One was 7, one was 14 or something, and didn't have underlying conditions, and they're dead. But yeah, they say, wow, yeah, most don't die. Yeah, very, 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 very few die. And it's kind of like, well, the problem isn't that they're all going to die. The problem is that they're all going to get infected. And because they're not dying, they're vectors for the virus. So they're not going to die. They're going to go home and infect their friends
carriers.
And relatives.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And they're just going to spread the virus. So that is one of the reasons that I think that this fall there's going to be major, major issues. The cases are still high. Saturday there were still over 1,000 deaths. They fell to about 500 over the weekend. Today is really results from Sunday. So the Sunday and Monday have a little bit lower on the deaths. They have a little bit lower on the cases. And they'll bounce right back tomorrow. And so for the rest of the week through Friday, they'll be back in the neighborhood of 50, 60,000 cases per day and 1,000 to 1,500 deaths per day. And there's no way you can have that level of virus. And those cases are throughout the U.S., but, you know, some of the highest cases are concentrated in these southern states where they haven't figured out that masks are a good idea. They just recommend it, but certainly not mandatory. And the students, you know, look at peer pressure. They say, well, they're not wearing a mask. I'm not going to wear a mask. But, you can't even see the virus. How bad can it be? So they're going to set up these, you know, hotspots, kind of like what happens when there's a holiday. It's what happened on Memorial Day, and it's going to happen again on Labor Day. And that's for the general population. And then for the student population, things have already got started in the South, and more and more schools are going to be opening up. Colleges are already, you know, bringing in the students. You know, they're going into the dormitories. And the virus is just going to set up shop. And it's, and that's part of the reason that, most scientists expect there to be a major wave in the fall. And because
what are we going to look for, Henry? How are we going to look for the flu virus to appear? What will we see first? And if they're both running rampant, we're in real trouble, big trouble, bigger trouble.
Well, the COVID, you know, the SARS-CoV-2 is already here. That's what I'm saying. That it's not. I mean, what's happening in these other countries like New Zealand that you mentioned, where they're talking about, you know, quarantining, and even Hawaii. These are areas that have had relatively low levels of virus. And they're concerned because those levels are now starting to go up. I mean, France has some issues. It was the same thing. But they're going from having, you know, 50 or 100 cases to having 100 or 200 cases. So they may have twice as many cases, but the number of cases in the whole country that they're all concerned about is they've got a couple hundred cases. And they're alarmed because the numbers had gone up. They had been staying low for a while, and now they're starting to go up. And in the U.S., you know, if you're an entire state that has 100 cases, that's considered very low. I mean, these states typically, most of the states are reporting at least 500 cases a day. That's 100. That's 500 cases per day, per state. Right. And a lot of them have over 1,000, and some of these have 5,000. And so they've already got that. So as far as the flu season hasn't started yet, the flu season doesn't really get going until around October. So you still have the rest of August, and you have all of September, and you've got the first half of October, where there normally wouldn't be much influenza. I mean, in the swine flu pandemic, it started early, so you did have it. It started to become very common right when school season began, and it started in August in the South. And even then, you kind of had a milder version that started in August and September, and it really was October, which is still early for flu season. That's still the beginning of the flu season. Usually, flu season peaks, you know, in early January, you know, maybe even in February.
So we may not see anything for 2 months. We may not see flu for 2 months.
Right, right, as far as the flu is concerned. But what I'm predicting, and most scientists are predicting, is that when you've got all of this virus, and you're going to ignore how much virus you have of SARS-CoV-2, and you're going to say, well, let's start school and see what happens. They already know what's going to happen. And some of the examples I gave in the Cherokee School District or in UNC or in Florida, where they insist that they have to go back to school, and it's the same thing in Arizona. I mean, they're going to have to cancel the classes because the teachers are going to refuse to go. I mean, there are already teachers
doing that.
Right,
yes.
Right. And so they're not going to be absent because they're in quarantine because they're infected. They're going to be absent because they said, this is crazy. You know, there's way too much virus. You have no control. You don't have good ventilation. You're not really set up to do the testing. You're not even requiring masks. I mean, the teachers aren't that dumb. I mean, the teachers can take a look and know how many students there are, how many are in their classes. 70% of them are still going to be there. It's still going to be crowded. And if they go and they say to high school kids, we would recommend you wear a mask, but, you know, it's up to you. You do what you want. They're not going to wear masks. And they're going to have 10% of them will wear masks. You know, their parents will say, what are you, crazy? You have to wear a mask. You're going to go to school with all those other students. So 10% will have it. And maybe 10% will take the mask to school. And they'll say, well, you know, hardly anybody's wearing it. It's kind of a pain in the neck to wear the mask. I'll just not take it. And others will say, oh, that's a political statement. You know, I'm not a Democrat. I'm not going to wear a mask. You know, the Republicans, they don't have any problem with this virus. They don't need masks. You know, they're going to yell at people who wear masks. And they're not going to wear masks. The virus is going to have the run of the school. And they're going to get them all infected. Right. They're going to get infected in school. And then the schools are going to say, well, this isn't going to work. Or they're going to say, well, I think I made the wrong choice. Can I switch over to online? And they're going to just bring the virus home. And that's where the problem is going to arise. It's not going to arise so much because you got a lot of students infected, because they do handle the virus better. So they aren't going to die. They're still going to get sick, and they're still going to go in the hospital. But they're mostly going to infect parents and friends, and they're the ones that are going to dump the numbers up. So there's got to be a big boost just because they're trying to get schools open under conditions that they have no business trying to get the schools open.
Well, they're going to learn here. We're going to see it all in the next few weeks. So it'll keep rolling
exactly.
Right along. All right. Very good, Henry. We're off and running another week. Let's see what happens.
Okay. Stay safe. Right. Talk to you tomorrow. Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye. Good night. Okay, Dr. Henry Nyman, we're doing this third hour every night till this pandemic does something favorable. So far, it's being pretty nasty. Back tomorrow in 21 hours. Thanks for being here. Take care. Talk soon.